Hello and welcome to another episode of Irreverent Testimony, a politics podcast by and for millennial Gen Xer types, although we will let any age group listen because that's our deal, being good liberals we are. I'm Travis and my new permanent co-host, Rachel.
Hi, everybody.
Pierre has decided to dedicate his time and focus to the ancient works of Sanskrit, so I wish him luck with that. We got a couple things to talk about today, today being October 2nd, 2015, not the least of which, of course, was yesterday's horrific mass shooting, yet another one in Oregon. And yeah, here we go again. Another one of these, huh?
Yep, I guess so. I guess we shouldn't be talking about it, though, right? Too soon?
Right, too soon on a politics show. Well, what I am going to do, what I would like us to do, instead of sort of the typical hand-wringing and pontificating and whatever, is at least try to get some of the facts in line. Because like most other things, when something happens and it's new, you get a lot of different sound bites and things being thrown out by a lot of different sources, and there's a lot of misinformation, I think more with this one than in recent ones. And part of the reason is that jackass sheriff in Oregon, Mr. Oathkeeper, who is trying to play coy for some reason. So he's fostering a lot of this misinformation and crap that's going around. Twitter was no help yesterday, not only being their usual Twitter, but my weird Twitter peeps kind of really let me down and disappointed me yesterday with some of their antics. We'll get into that a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, I just want to stick to the facts because the people maybe listening have heard about it and they haven't – you know, nobody wants to just sit there and be glued to the TV for hours and a lot of what was – yeah, exactly. And a lot of what was coming across over the news – in the past 12 hours or so has been factually wrong anyway. They're just kind of running with bits of information that they're getting. So let's just talk about what we do know.
Great.
If you want to start with that, Rachel, I guess.
Sure. So there was a community college in Oregon, in a rural area of Oregon in Douglas County. And yesterday afternoon, there was a 26-year-old man who opened fire at that community college. And I'm not sure what the fatality count is at this point. Last time I checked, I think it was 13. And that he is not a student of that community college. And I think for the facts, that's kind of all we know. Is that right?
Yeah, we know he's 26 years old. We know he posted some things on 4chan. He had some stuff about the Irish Republican Army, but nothing that would say he was sort of actively involved in whatever is left of that movement. That he had some pictures where he was posing with a gun, which means absolutely nothing.
Pretty much
half of every singles profile here in the greater Denver area has that.
Yes.
So we don't know a whole much. We're getting sort of the usual tropes. He was quiet. He kept to himself. He was kind of socially awkward. He was angry. He had some hateful ideas or feelings. White guy, of course. And that's kind of all we know. We'll know more, but we may not find out a whole lot. This guy necessarily maybe didn't record a manifesto like the guy in California did.
We should mention that he is deceased.
Yes.
He will never get anything out of him. So
no.
He's dead.
He's dead apparently at the hands of cops, but again, the sheriff over there in Oregon is not dispensing with much information at this point. And we'll get into him, too, because he's kind of an interesting case study. But that's what we know at this point. Of course, a lot of the knee-jerk reactions from people were, a lot of people took to Twitter to sort of forward their martyrdom theories or, you know, engage in their hostility towards whoever. Okay, I bet it was a Muslim, or I bet it was a Christian white guy. I bet it was this. I bet it was that. Before knowing anything and automatically jumping and hoping to get to a place where they can forward some kind of agenda, which is human. It's human nature, I understand, unfortunately. But no, it wasn't a Muslim. It doesn't seem to be a Christian zealot. There seemed to be some scant information that maybe he was an atheist and that he was against religion. There is also a report, a unconfirmed report, that some people were asking people if they were Christian, and then if they said yes, he'd shoot him in the head, and if they said no, he'd shoot him not in the head, which I don't know. That's open to interpretation.
I think it's really unsettling for me that when something like this happens, everyone has their go-to of who they hoped did it.
Right.
Hoped it was.
Yeah.
In order, just like you said, to sort of further an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really unsettling, that that's not just the left or the right. Everyone sort
it's
of
everybody.
Has, has some sort of agenda, when really not necessarily any of those things are going to be true. And to sort of politicize the violence and try to put an agenda on it, I think is kind of offensive to the people that were murdered and their families and the whole community. And I think we should kind of check ourselves on that, myself included. I always hope, oh God, I hope it's a white person. You know what I mean? Just so that the racial issues don't come up so much. But I think we should all sort of check ourselves on that front.
Yeah, and let me – and maybe it's good to expand on that when you say – oh God, I hope it's a white person. That'll be interpreted probably the wrong way from certain people. What I mean by that is this. Let's say you're a Muslim family and you live on a street that's almost entirely white Christians. Whether it's copacetic in your neighborhood or not, normally, this is the kind of thing that can really upset that balance. If this had been a Islamic extremist terrorist act.
Yes.
Now a white Christian person can turn around and say, well, if this was a white Christian and he was killing people for God or Jesus or against abortion or whatever, then that puts a target on us as well. And in theory, they're kind of right. However,
that's not really true.
Right. It's a false equivalency, because chances are they're saying that from a place where everybody on their street is also a white Christian. They're not sticking out as the one – different family or culture or religion or whatever that might be a target of just blind hatred, narrowcasting.
And they're
everybody.
The cultural hegemon. I mean, white Christian men, I don't worry about with hate crimes. I don't worry about community backlash, because they are not only in control and in power, but also the majority. So
sure.
It's less, less upsetting, I think, for
But of course, they like to say that they're not, or they're not going to be the majority anymore, and how that's a terrible, scary thing. And that, but that's sort of another topic. The point I was getting to was there are reports that this guy supposedly said, "Are you Christian?" And if you give the wrong answer, it would depend on where you got shot, not whether you got shot or not. However, that's not confirmed, and in fact, there are some early reports that seem to contradict that. And I want to remind everybody that a long-running meme that actually lasted years, and probably most people still believe, is that the two Columbine shooters were going around asking people if they believed in God and then shooting them based on their answers. And it turns out that seems to be a big steaming pile, that was an absolute lie.
Correct. That is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
That did not happen. People that were there, eyewitnesses, support the idea that did not happen, but it sure made the rounds in the media.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure still to this day it's sort of an urban legend that –
Yep.
Is still believed, so we shouldn't jump to conclusions. Now, I'm not saying whether he did or not. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Maybe he did just based on the urban legend that never actually happened, that this is what the Columbine shooters did. And I also should give some context here. Rachel and I live in the greater Denver area, so we're about 20 minutes north, east or west, respectively, from Columbine, where all that went down. And the Aurora Theater shooting and James Holmes is literally about a mile and a half from me, and that's the movie theater I actually frequent. Didn't realize that.
Where we go to the movies.
Didn't even realize that until the second or third movie I went to see after I moved here. I'm like, wait a minute, is this? Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So we are sort of right smack dab in the middle of where a lot of this crap has gone down.
Yes. It's not a great thing for our state to be known by, and it's upsetting. I was living in Colorado in the high school, actually, when Columbine happened, and I can tell you that there was quite a backlash for us on that front, because we grew up goth kids, and of course they were goth kids as well, or some version of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I have a lot of history with the gun violence in Colorado.
They weren't really goth kids. From my recollection, they wore a lot of black. And they wore trench coats and they listened to Marilyn Manson and stuff, but not really goth kids in any sense of the word. Goth kids typically don't go bowling and say Heil Hitler and, you know, that's not really a goth kid scene. So.
No. But that's how they were sort of portrayed in the media.
Right, right.
That's how our school administrators
That's another thing. They don't do that as much anymore, but back then it was like, okay, what caused this? It must have been the violent video games they played, or the heavy metal, or the all black they wore, or whatever. You know,
Famous cult, or that was a very big thing.
Yes. It wasn't these super high powered weapons that they had access to, right?
No, or the social isolation, or just a lot of factors. But So anyway, that's what we know about Columbine. And in the coming weeks and months, I think we'll find a lot more out about this community college shooting. But at this point, we don't know much other than here we go again.
Here we go again. Obama took to the airwaves to just sort of look like a really defeated president and just basically saying, I'm sick of this. I don't know what the hell we're supposed to do about it. Maybe you people want to start thinking about electing people who want to enact some sort of gun control. That's basically what he said.
Yes. And, you know, I think it's really interesting. This sort of gun violence and mass shootings has kind of defined his presidency in a way. When he was interviewed by Mark Maron, one of the things he talked about as being the most frustrating part of his job as president was precisely this, that he had to continuously come out and address mass gun violence, and that nothing was done about it, that nothing seems to ever going to be done about it. He said that's one of his greatest frustrations, and I can understand that.
Yeah. Maybe he'll wrangle Boehner and say, hey, on the way out, let's do something about this, but I doubt that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, yeah, the political will is not there to do anything, despite the overwhelming majority of Americans, gun owners or conservatives or not, who want to do something. However, we now have developed this equivalency that doing anything, whether that's closing gun show loopholes or beefing up background checks – or even doing the research and statistics in terms of from a public health perspective to look at the problem is blocked continuously by Congress, because anything that even talks about restricting anybody, any American possibly, from gun ownership is an infringement on Second Amendment rights. And this is not just the view of toothless rednecks in a trailer park, you know, polishing their shotgun and screaming about Obama being a Muslim. This is otherwise relatively intelligent people. I mean, I have a friend of mine, an attorney, he may be listening, and he tries to give me the specious argument that anything, any legislation at all, even that would slow down the process of somebody getting a hold of a weapon, is a Second Amendment infringement. And
it frustrates me to no end, because we don't feel that way about any other amendment. You know, the First Amendment's sort of everyone's favorite, everyone's sweetheart, and there are restrictions.
There are limits. Yeah, you can't yell fire in a theater, and you can't endanger people, and you can't. It's even gone farther in terms of hate speech in some realm, which maybe some people have ambivalent thoughts about. But the point is, First Amendment isn't a license to say anything, anywhere, anytime without any repercussions.
Right, not say anything. Also, freedom of the press is pretty broad, but there are some restrictions there.
Yes.
There's also, you know, peaceable assembly, sure, but then we also had free speech zones during the Bush administration. So we feel that it's fine to limit, within reason, other amendments, because reason. But for some reason, there's this disconnect about the Second Amendment.
There is, and it seems the other side's pretty intractable, so I'm not even trying to reach a reason with them anymore. But their position is any sort of legislation. Well, there's two arguments. One is this asinine argument that it's a slippery slope to Obama taking everybody's guns away, or B, that any sort of increased measures of your background checks or whatever is an infringement, a Second Amendment infringement, and therefore unconstitutional. So,
and I've also heard an argument recently coming out of some of my gun nut people, this really interesting argument that none of those things would help or work.
Well, I'm going to get to that. Yeah. that gets more into sort of just some common sense and understanding things in the realm of a continuum of action rather than everything being black and white, which right. is what politicians and special interest groups explain to people like children so that nothing yeah. ever gets done or changed.
Yep.
But backing up a second, I want to talk about the sheriff and
yes.
the sheriff in Oregon. Well, first of all, before that, let me give some more background. There's a spat between Think Progress and some other liberal outlets and like Breitbart because the first thing, of course, that a lot of right-wingers jumped to, I'm thinking of Jeff Duncan and Mike Huckabee specifically, jumped to Twitter and said, ah, see, these gun-free zones are going to get everybody killed. But it turns out this was not a gun-free zone, even though the college in their handbook specified that you can't bring any guns without written permission, which a concealed carry license would fall under that realm.
Okay.
They're saying, no, see, it was a gun-free zone. But that argument falls apart because we know at least one and perhaps several people that were in the college at the time of the shooting were armed at the time. They chose not to return fire for, a variety of reasons.
Sure.
But to say, A, that it was a gun-free zone, or B, that the state law, and I'll get to that in a second, the state law which stated that it could not be a gun-free zone, even though the college had this deal in their handbook where they said you can't bring a gun unless you have authorization, essentially a concealed carry permit. But they're sure. still trying to maintain, no, it was a gun-free zone. But again, I'm not going to bother arguing with these people because
right.
they're insane.
Yes.
So, no, it was not a gun-free zone. No matter how much you want to tell me this guy's red, you're not going to convince me it's not blue.
Right.
It was not a gun-free zone. There were, in fact, people armed at the time. They decided not to run out and start spraying bullets into a panicked scene, which was probably a wise idea. And I'll get to that because the perpetrators of UC gun-free zones are terrible and we need more armed good guys. How that went horribly wrong in Texas just a couple days ago, and now that's going to be completely buried because of what happened here in Oregon. But on to the sheriff. Rachel, what can you tell us about Mr. Happy Officer Friendly Sheriff here in Oregon?
Yes. So I can tell you that the sheriff, after the
– sounds like he's coming for you.
Or Sandy Hook, was it? Was it Newtown or Sandy Hook that he came out and said – he basically wrote an open letter to President Obama saying that both he and his fellow sheriffs around the country were not in support of any kind of gun control or gun regulation or anything that could infringe on the Second Amendment,
mm-hmm.
And that it would not help and would not prevent mass shootings. And then in his very county, he just had a mass shooting at a school.
Right. Well, I don't think he actually wrote that. He's a member of the Oath Keepers, which are essentially sort of a grassrootsy AstroTurf, we hate Obama, keep your damn government hands off my, government subsidies type of group. And that looked very much sort of polished and distributed by them for any local officials who were for the cause to release. And it was probably that. But be that as it may.
His name was on it.
His name was on it, sure, as yep. he authorized it, but I doubt he penned it. But he certainly believed it.
Yeah.
And endorsed it.
Yes.
And then what's important to know was that in 2011, there was Oregon University System in the State House in Oregon. They basically shot down I'm sorry for the terrible pun – the – gun-free zone campus loss was – looks like November 2011 where the Oregon University System decided not to appeal the state house basically saying, no, we're not going to do the gun-free zones in college thing. So that is why guns were allowed on campuses and why some classmates or people who were attending this college yesterday were in fact legally armed. So there is no gun-free zone argument to be made. I suppose you can argue, okay, yeah, the state law says this, but because the university's bylaws said that, a bunch of otherwise armed people decided not to bring their guns and therefore we didn't do the shootout at the OK Corral and might have killed this guy. I mean, if you want to believe that, that's fine, I guess.
But the facts don't really back it up. There's been a lot of analysis about this after the various shootings that have happened, where trained, you know, snipers and people like that have tried to simulate this and tried to, you know, take their weapon out and aim and shoot in this short time frame, and they're unable to do it. So I find it hard to believe that your average Joe with a concealed carry permit is going to be able to. Doesn't seem like in that sort of highly emotional situation, it's likely that that would help.
Well, highly emotional, confusing situation, right? If you bring your – well, unfortunately, this may change here in the United States. But typically, whether you're armed or not, and you're going to school, the last thing you're thinking about is, I better be ready to take up my gun and shoot a crazy guy who's trying to kill a bunch of people.
Right.
You know, you're not in a combat situation day in, day out. So your decision and reaction in that split second to, A, make the right decision, B, be well-trained enough and enough of a marksman that you're going to hit only the bad guy and not innocent bystanders.
Right.
And C, now this is for a school situation. These things happened in dark theaters, right?
Right.
In other sorts of crowds, houses of worship. And to that end, let me bring up what happened the other day in Houston.
Yes.
I will go ahead and read some of this sort of verbatim. This is from the KHOU, and I think it appeared in the Houston Chronicle. One man is injured after a carjacking and shooting at a gas station in North Houston Saturday night. Not a big deal. I lived in Houston. This happens a lot there. Houston police responded to a shooting call around 11:15 Saturday at Valero Gas Station on Jensen Drive and Reed Street in North Houston. Officials say two men jumped another man in the gas station parking lot and took the victim's Chevrolet pickup truck. Now this is where it gets important. Pay attention. Police say a witness then pulled out a gun and began shooting at the suspects, accidentally hitting the carjacking victim in the head. The victim was transported to a nearby hospital where he remains in stable condition. Police say the witness who shot at suspects picked up shell casings and left the scene. Okay. So, Mr. Armed Good Samaritan, which is what the NRA and the Republicans want, decided he was going to play good guy with a gun, and he ended up, while trying to shoot the carjackers,
which, by the way, is that legal? I don't think that you get to shoot people who are stealing a car.
Citizen. Yeah, that's not yours.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. There's been
cars, but it's not even his car, so I don't. I don't think that's even legal, but go ahead.
You know what? There's been no follow-up on the story. So I don't – and in light of everything that happened yesterday, I don't know if we're going to have much at this point.
I know. It's crazy.
But the point is, here's Mr. Good Samaritan armed doing his armed good guy with a gun theory. And guess what? He winds up shooting the actual carjacking victim in the head. Now that's just one guy in a parking lot. Imagine – a shooter in a crowded classroom or a movie theater or what have you, and then Mr. Good Samaritan with a gun is going to pull out his gun and spray bullets into the scene.
Right.
Why people think this is a good idea or this is the quote answer?
Or let's say in the NRA's fantasy world, 50% of the crowd has a gun and they're all Good Samaritans and they all start pulling out their guns. That's way, way, way worse in my opinion.
Well, right. then you've got 10 people shooting. Who's the bad guy? Who's the good guy?
Yeah.
Who's shooting at who? And then it gets really fun when the police show up and they try to figure out who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. And you're the good guy who just took some pot shots at the bad guy. You run outside and you say, hey, he's here. He's over here. The cops just see a guy with a gun. They're probably going to shoot you dead too. So I can't imagine the bedlam and bloodbath if the NRA and the Republicans get their wish on the armed citizenry at all times.
Trying to deal
with this.
I can't fathom the argument. When you really work it through and think it through, and you
see
real life situations like in Houston, it doesn't make sense.
Well, it's just common sense. I mean, you're thinking about a situation where now look, if you're a trained army soldier or an off-duty cop and you happen to be armed and maybe you're sort of ready and know the clues and are better trained for this situation, you might have a better chance.
Yes.
And if that's where we're getting to the point where we need armed cops or soldiers in every classroom and movie theater in this country,
that's much more practical than maybe, I don't know, gun control laws.
Yeah, but that's a brave new world, right? I mean,
yeah
that's kind of where we're heading.
What happened in, I can't remember, it was on a I want to say a subway in another country overseas, and there were some American citizens who were trained military people, and someone
in France,
on the train,
right?
France, yeah, I think so. And they did not have weapons; they were not armed, but they were able to take down the terrorist. I guess he was going to shoot up the train,
mm-hmm.
And they weren't armed, and they were able to do that. So, you know.
Yeah, and they're heroes, and they deserve all due respect. Now,
yeah.
It's interesting. I was just reading a statistic, and I'm sorry I don't have the article in front of me, but there is there are statistics for people who intervene to stop a mass shooting or a terrorist act, and the vast majority of them are actually unarmed.
Yes.
Unfortunately, in Oregon yesterday, there was a decorated Army veteran who was unarmed and tried to intervene. Unfortunately, he was shot in the process. He may have saved some lives. You know, I don't know. But that's not really my point. My point is not advocating that people should be unarmed or armed, or unarmed people should try to stop an armed gunman.
No.
My point is the answer from the other side of how we deal with this, short of any sort of gun legislation, is that everybody should be armed at all times, and, quote, all the good guys can then, quote, take out the bad guys. Is such lunacy, I can't even respond to it sensibly.
Yep.
Other than to say, if this starts happening, we'll have more situations like Houston where a bunch of innocent people are actually shot and killed by the so-called Good Samaritans.
Yes. The death rate will be higher, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be a bigger bloodbath.
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of where we are now.
I want to talk just for a second about that other argument about why we can't have gun control laws,
mm-hmm.
because they won't work.
Right.
I just was in an argument the other day with someone about this, and his opinion was that if we regulate magazine clips and if we regulate certain types of weapons, if we regulate all guns, for example, then people will just build bombs. So
right.
I understand what he's trying to say, but I think that that's a stretch. I think guns are readily accessible and people know how to use them. It's not that difficult to shoot someone. And it's sort of an impulse thing.
Yes.
If you want to build a bomb, there's a lot that goes into that. It's a very not impulsive act. And so
it's much more premeditated. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, if you're going to be present to bomb, then you know, you're putting yourself at a greater risk, where in theory, if you're not intending that you're going to die in a shootout with the cops, you know, you have a weapon. It's not just sort of a suicide act, but actually getting to suicide rates are much higher in this country because of the access of weapons. If a very, very depressed person is impulsive and has access to a gun, they're more likely to actually end their life than,
correct.
You know, if they find a razor or try to overdose on pills or something.
Right. And I think it's also important to note that even though we can wax poetical about whether or not gun control laws work, it's not as though we don't have any data to back this up.
Mm-hmm.
In Australia, they had a mass shooting, and the whole country responded with, oh my God, that's terrible and unacceptable.
We can't have that here, yeah.
We can't have that here. And they enacted pretty strong gun laws, and they haven't had one since, to my knowledge.
Nope, they have not had one mass shooting since. Now, they imposed very, very draconian gun laws. It is very, very difficult for an average citizen to get a hold of any sort of assault rifle or handgun there now. And nobody's talking about anything like that in this country. We're not even close to that. We're just trying to the very basics. We're talking about beefing up background checks and closing gun show loopholes, and we can't even get that far, you know.
Right. But when you look at what works, it does work. So this idea that it wouldn't work is like, well, except it does.
Well, more importantly is the specious logic that you'll take the specifics maybe of this case and say, well, how's it good? We don't know if this guy got his guns through a gun show. And it's important to know. We don't know how this guy got his guns. We don't know if he bought them online, if he got them at a gun show, if he just went into Walmart. We don't know how he attained the weapons he had. But things work on a continuum, and it's a much bigger picture. So if I'm saying, geez, we should at least talk about closing loopholes and do background checks, and they say, well, a background check wouldn't have helped because this guy got his gun from wherever and wherever. Well, we're not talking about a panacea law to stop every single potential shooting. That's not
right.
What we're talking about, and that's not a logical argument. It would be like, you know, saying when Ralph Nader or people before him were trying to get better seatbelt laws built into automobiles, which a lot of the automobile industry also resisted for a while.
Yes.
And there were similar arguments. Well, how's that going to prevent rollover crashes? And what's that going to do about head-on collisions? And so, you know,
right.
Things work on a continuum. And a step in the right direction or addressing with laws things that might affect certain types of shooting is a start.
Right.
You know, you got to start somewhere. Completely saying that gun laws just won't work because they won't prevent every type of shooting and keeping every type of person from obtaining every type of gun is not a credible argument against gun control laws.
Correct.
Not if you're a thinking person and you're having an honest, intelligent conversation about it, at least.
Right. It is super frustrating when they say, well, look at this case, though. That wouldn't have helped. Okay, fine. I don't care. I think it would help. I think in the long run, over the long term, big picture, it will help, period. Science says.
Yeah. And, you know, even and remember, you had a Surgeon General that nearly got run out or did get run out because they said that gun violence is a public health issue in this country, which of course it is.
Yeah.
Because that was a political anti-gun argument, or even funding to do the research to get the statistics in line on how bad the problem is and how to possibly address it from a public health standpoint. Congress continually blocks that.
Yes.
So, I mean, we can't even get the binoculars up to take a look at the disaster, let alone address how to fix it.
Which for me is the sort of most transparent argument against it is like, you know, guns don't kill people, people kill people, and all of that NRA nonsense.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's study it. No, we can't do that. Why? Because we're wrong. Right.
Yeah.
Like, we refuse to even allow a study to be done because the facts are not going to be on the side of the gun lobby, period.
And we'll get back to this a little bit later. And our friend Bernie Sanders has got a little bit of explaining to do in terms of some of the legislation that he has supported have immuned gun manufacturers. And that affects actually some people right here in Aurora. And we'll get to that a little bit later. But
yeah,
we're going to take a quick break for now, and we'll be right back in a couple minutes. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We got a slate of topics today. One very depressing one that we just kind of covered with the Oregon shooting yesterday. And now an enraging one. The GOP outreach to women voters continues headlong, this time by attacking Planned Parenthood because of some doctored videos. Now they dismember babies and sell their parts for profit, according to some members of Congress and all the GOP candidates for president. So I'm going to basically turn this one over to Rachel and let her give her spiel on this whole clown show that went down earlier this week.
Yeah, this one really gets me. So the GOP House asked Cecile Richards, who is the president of Planned Parenthood, or I guess maybe CEO, the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, asked her to come in and explain herself in regard to this false notion of them dismembering babies and selling body parts and all of that. So she did voluntarily.
Yeah.
And there was an over 5-hour hearing where she was just a disgusting display of misogyny, intentional misinformation. And it didn't go great for Cecile. So
I think it went worse for them.
Yeah. I mean, watching it was astounding. This notion that there is no war on women, or that they're not misogynistic, or that this is really just about protecting babies or whatever, it was very easily, so transparently dispelled watching them talk to her. I can't imagine being more disrespectful for some of them, particularly Jim Jordan, you know, you bring this woman in, and she's a highly accomplished woman, businesswoman, and ask questions of her and then really talk over her and don't allow her to answer the questions. And it was just really quite a display. Any woman watching it, I think, would look at that and just think, my God, like, how do you vote for these people?
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Right. Well, a lot of them don't. Well, I mean, look, let's be fair. When we say that they're chasing away women voters, there is a very strong block of conservative, married, older, white women voters who are in lockstep with this crap.
Yep.
Or they pretend to be for their husband's sake.
Yep.
We're talking about the large growing demographic of younger, unmarried, or married or unmarried women.
Yes.
Who they're just losing badly and have decided that they're just
doubling
not,
down.
Yeah, they're just doubling, tripling down.
Yep.
What was interesting to me, Rachel, and maybe you noticed this, I thought the whole point of this was that there's this contention, you know, forwarded by Ted Cruz and the like, that based on these videos, what Planned Parenthood is actually doing is illegal because they're actually profiting from the selling of these parts from aborted fetuses. And in fact, what they're suggesting is more nefariously, they're pushing women into getting abortions so they can profit off these. But there was barely any of that in these hearings. It was more like, oh, you guys don't really do anything for women's health, and you do all these abortions, and in fact, you know, the numbers are going down in terms of the other services you provide. It was mostly that stuff. It was much more broad.
And it was really interesting, intentional misinformation in terms of federal funding for abortions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they kept making this contention that how do we know that you're not, you know, we give you all this money, how do we know what you're really spending it on? And that's so frustrating because we do know very well that that's not what's happening. We do not give them a lump sum of money.
No.
The federal government reimburses them for certain things that are allowable, so such as birth control and STD testing and that kind of stuff. And so them coming out and sort of just blindly knowing, I think they know the facts, but it's so much easier for the public to be on their side if they say things like, well, sure, you say you're not spending it on abortions, but how do we know, than to say, we know exactly what we reimbursed you for, and none of them were abortions.
Right.
And I think it was Bonnie Watson Coleman came out and basically made that argument that, like, this is ridiculous. This sort of argument about funding is wrong, and you know it, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, we've already done it. We've already crossed all those T's.
Right.
And then there was the Hyde Amendment, which said that federal funds cannot go to abortion, so we've already settled that.
Right, and it's not. So
no, their argument is, yeah, there's that law, but they're taking this money and using it for abortions anyway, which they have no proof of course.
No, of course not. Of course not. And so just to, if anyone isn't fully clear on this, the videos are doctored, of course, which we've talked about previously. But the donation of fetal tissue is something that they do, and it's vital to public health and to research.
Just ask Ben Carson.
Exactly right. Just ask Ben Carson. It's vital to
of course, he won't tell you the truth, but he used it for his research, which you had to.
His name is on the paper. Uh-huh. Yep. I mean, I still have had no one – haven't heard anyone in the media ask him about that or at any of the debates. But, yeah, they do donate fetal tissue. That is a fact. And it is also responsible for some of the vaccines that we have that have cured diseases. And they're not trying to make light of it. I think what's difficult for the American people in terms of the videos is that this is a doctor who does this all day long, and she's speaking to who she thinks is someone else in this field.
Yeah,
and they're using very sort of clinical, they're not speaking to the public about it. She's under the impression that she's in an environment with someone who does this work. And so just like if you're listening to two cops talk to each other, they're going to use a language with each other that they wouldn't use in a public statement.
Cops? No.
Right? Or teachers, or really anyone who works in an industry, you get to this sort of like down to business kind of, this is what is going on.
Yeah. And I have worked in clinical research. So I've been in neuro ERs, and I've been in animal model labs, and I've seen what happens. And you know what? Most lay people would not be able to stomach the reality of what goes into a lot of very important scientific research. That's just,
right.
That's just how it is.
Yeah.
So even some people in it are queasy about it.
Sure. I mean, so if the language seems or the interaction seems crass or unempathetic or, that kind of thing, it's not because that's who these people are or what the organization stands for. It's because they're in an environment where they're talking about something that they do on a daily basis. And so this, I think that's partly why the videos are sort of damning, for people even who are pro-choice. They get a little squicked out by it. But just remember that, I think, is my point there.
Yeah, that's part of it. Do we even want to bother with the nonsense Carly Fiorina has been pushing with claiming that this thing was on the video? Well, no, it's on some video somewhere, so therefore this has to do with something, but it has no link to Planned Parenthood whatsoever.
Right? Isn't it like there's a stillborn baby in one of the shots or something, and
There is a video with a
but there's
stillborn baby, but it is not
right.
a video that has anything to do with the video that this anti-abortion group produced in these
And it has
sting
nothing
videos.
to
It's
do with
not
Planned
related. It's not even
Parenthood.
related. It's
Right.
not even clear that this has that the stillborn baby has anything to do with any sort of abortion services whatsoever.
Right? So
But
what?
she saw that and that disturbed her, and that has to do something with these videos in Planned Parenthood. And at least most of the mainstream press is calling her on it and being like, "What the hell are you talking about?" And
Because a stillborn baby exists on video somewhere, we should defund Planned Parenthood does not a sense make. No.
But she's still pushing that.
Yeah.
But for the next couple of weeks, it's going to be all gun control all the time, so we're not even going to be touching on this stuff,
No.
which should be
I do
interesting.
think after this hearing, it's going to be much more difficult for them to shut the government down over funding for Planned Parenthood.
No, they got plenty else to shut the government down for, though. This was just their,
Right.
this was a love letter to their extremely right, crazy hard-wing anti-abortion base, basically.
Yep. It was an opportunity for all of the candidates to make their totally out of step with everyone else anti-woman stance known to their base.
Sure, as if we didn't know. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just in case we forgot, they don't like us very much, and they wanted to remind us of that.
And they really, really, the party of no regulation and personal freedom really wants to regulate the living shit out of your vagina.
That's correct. That's what Dan Savage says. I think his quote is, "They want the government just small enough to fit in my vagina."
Right. And you don't want it there.
I really don't. Honestly, I
And
would
I don't
rather.
want it there.
Yeah, no. No thanks.
Nope. So there's that. Anything else to talk about the Planned Parenthood stuff before we pivot to the Pope's hot secret date with Kim Davis?
No, I think we should do that.
All right. So the Pope and Kim Davis had a secret romantic rendezvous on the planet of Naboo with lovely careening waterfalls and oh wait, no, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of one of the prequels. Anyway, just as bad. This is interesting. This is interesting. Again, this has been overshadowed by the news in the last 24 to 48 hours. But
We should go chronologically on this because I called this, if you remember. I
well, okay,
said
you go
the end of
chronologically, and then I'll give you my take on why there this one is a lot more complicated than it seems.
Yes. So there was early reporting from Kim Davis's attorneys that she was able to meet with Pope Frank, and that during their meeting, he said that he blessed her and that he would pray for her and that she should, quote, stay strong. And then everyone kind of went, what? And then the Vatican scheduling office said, yes, indeed, he did meet with the Pope, or she did, sorry. And then today, more reports have come out that, okay, she was in the same room as the Pope and about 12 other people, and he didn't really specifically address her at all. And the Vatican wanted to make it clear via the Pope that he does not necessarily stand by anything having to do with.
which her lawyer and husband, fifth or sixth husband, they deny that, by the way. They say it was a secret, awesome, one-on-one, very close, intimate meeting.
Where he just loves her and thinks everything she's doing is
She
amazing
thinks
and
she's just
God's work.
amazing. Well, you know what? Whether it was a one-on-one meeting or a group meeting or she was like, in a stadium full of 50,000 people or whatever, I think the point is, I think Pope Frank was being used as a pawn in something he had no idea what WTF was going on. He's a smart, sharp guy who pays attention to issues, and I'm sure he knows at least peripherally who she might be. But yeah. I don't think he was terribly concerned with what she was doing. And more evidence is coming to light that there are some in the basically what is the Vatican embassy in the U.S. There are some folks who would have had a political sort of agenda to get these two together just for the photo op.
Correct. And I, you know, when we were talking about it the other day, my opinion was really, I doubt that he really, like you said, knows who she is or cares. And it was really surprising to me that given the kind of broad things he's been talking about and his message, that he would step his foot into something so local and so specific and so subtle. And I think
that hasn't been
evident.
His style at all. In fact, that hasn't been the style of many popes, really.
Right.
They've done it in more subtle ways. Certainly even Pope Ratz, who got involved in like the John Kerry stuff.
Yeah,
would not be so sort of obvious as, let's say, he took a trip to the United States and like he met with like Terry Schiavo's family or something. Like, he probably wouldn't have even done that.
Right.
So this wouldn't make much sense, even if Pope Frank really said was really all gung ho for what Kim Davis was doing to sort of meet her and give her a thumbs up that could be turned around and dispelled in the international media. It doesn't make a lot of sense that he would do that, whether he believed it or not.
I agree. I mean, if it were a different situation and let's say she was still in jail or she was a much greater political figure than a county clerk from Kentucky, maybe, but I just don't see him stepping in that for no reason.
Also, it's Pope Frank style. If, let's say, you, Rachel, had somehow been able to get a one-on-one audience with Pope Frank and Blixa, and you held up Blixa and said, here, meet my cat. Pope Frank would have said, you know, bless you, my cat, stay strong, and, you know,
I'll pray for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He loves everybody, right? He'll bless anybody. There was a report that she was given, not by Pope Frank, but by his staff or whomever, two blessed rosary strands. I don't know if you call them, I'm not Catholic. And she gave those to her parents, who are both Catholic. But even that's sort of like when you go to the White House, you get a pen with the White House thing on it. It's not really it's any sort of signal that meant anything other than
– Right, right. And we should – today the Vatican is making clear like we are not endorsing Kim Davis or her politics at all. The only thing we're saying is that they were in a room together. That's all.
Exactly. That's exactly
right. Yeah. There's another angle too, which I actually sent that to David Wellman. He didn't mention it, my ego's horribly bruised. No, I'm kidding. but a couple years ago, there was an interesting article, and I actually remember reading it. I don't know why. About how because Kim Davis is not Catholic, she's apostolic,
right?
And Frank and the Catholic Church in general, there's a lot of apparently apostolics in Italy. And they have not been treated so well by the Catholic Church historically. And one of the things Pope Francis said after he came to power is he wanted to try to mend those fences. He's trying to mend fences with everybody. So some people think because she's apostolic, that might have something to do. But I think that's actually probably a stretch. But it's another angle that's out there. I don't know.
That's really interesting, actually. I didn't know that. Also, I wanted to chime in from our resident Catholic expert, Brenna.
Yes.
Raised Catholic. And she and I were having a discussion last night. And basically, she said the thing to remember about Catholics versus Christians and sort of the Pope's stance on gay rights and all of that is that they believe cannot be gay. This is an anomaly. But you should talk. And so.
Yeah, because that happens.
Right.
A lot, yeah. Catholics say you shouldn't act on a lot of impulses to get done.
And so while he seems liberal because he said you can't judge gay people because it's normal and it's not normal, but it's a disorder. He also is very much in line with the church teachings that, you know, it's a sin if you act on it. She also said that when he was a bishop in Argentina, he did support civil unions for gay people because he believes in sort of human rights and is less concerned about political implications. And so her opinion sort of is hate the sin, not the sinner, but that he's a compassionate dude. So.
Yeah, but that never seems to filter down into the most, I wanted to say pious, but I should say most religious folks in our society, does it?
Right. No, no.
The hate definitely seems to gravitate to the sinner.
Sure does.
No matter what the perceived sin is.
Correct. And, you know, when you look at sort of what that sin is from the most religious people, the priests and the bishops and the youth pastors, they seem to get in an awful lot of trouble when it comes to sex things, don't
they? Sure. Yeah. Don't they? But, you know,
people yelling the loudest tend to seem to have the most issues with that.
But in terms of this meeting you can't believe a word that comes out of Kim Davis's lawyer's mouth.
No.
He's a lunatic, and, you know, he's self-aggrandizing, and he's on his own sort of mission and crusade.
Yep.
To do his thing, and he'll spout whatever BS sounds good.
Yep.
Did they meet? Yes. In what context? I have no idea. Does it really matter? It would only matter if you know, Francis was going to turn around and sort of acknowledge his support for her positions, but he's not. So,
no.
You know, who cares? Somebody.
It matters to gay Catholics. That's what I've sort of been hearing. It's
right.
Like, hey, you could, like, we're actually Catholic. Maybe you could have had a meeting with us instead of the crazy apostolic whatever Kentucky lady.
Sure, and if he really believes in the reaching out to the gay community, then he may have to turn around and double down based on this.
Yeah.
My guess is if Pope Frank is cut from the kind of cloth, so to speak, that he seems to have been cut from in trying to bring more inclusion and less divisiveness, I think he's going to be ticked off at somebody in the Vatican, and more heads will roll. Because remember, there's politics in the Vatican too. There's people still very loyal to the Ratzenberg doctrine. There's people still very loyal to the Pope John Paul II doctrine. There's a lot of people in the Vatican not at all comfortable with the direction that Pope Frank is taking things. So. It would definitely seem to me there would be an agenda to at least get these two together, and that would accomplish a nice bit of propaganda, regardless of the actual substance of the meeting.
Exactly. Yeah. I really don't even think he probably knows who she is. I mean, he does now, but I think at the time it was very much like, yes, God bless you, child. Yes, God bless you. I'll pray for you. Like, you know.
Or maybe he was prompted. There's this lady, and she's embroiled in this controversy because of her faith, and, you know, something.
Sure.
But we don't know. We don't know. Right. We should say that we really have no idea. And look, I'll play the cynic and the devil's advocate here and say, hey, maybe Francis knew full well, and, you know, maybe he does completely support Kim Davis, and maybe it's just now that there's sort of a weird political backlash that he's sort of hedging his bets. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but my gut tells me that this was some political shenanigans by some people in the Vatican connected to some people in the American Catholic bishop system. And then, God, that's another thing that drives me crazy. When I saw MSNBC and the day the Pope came to New York, which reminds me of that song from the House of Blue Leaves. Anyway, that's a sort of an obscure play. But, they had Timothy Dolan all over the place, who is obnoxious and grotesque, horrible anti-gay, just a real crap burger of a person, and seeing Chris Matthews and everybody just kiss his ass because he was on TV, you know, sort of following the Pope around like a puppy dog, was kind of nauseating. That whole MSNBC's whole Pope rock star coverage was just a wee bit over the top, I would say.
I would agree with that. We have to remember, like, the Pope is a historic institution for sure, but really in this day and age, does he matter that much? Like, there's literally no other news. There's nothing else to be talking about other than the religious leader from the Vatican in Italy, which has nothing whatsoever to do with anything that has to do with us, came to town. Like, okay, good. And he met with the president, report on that, fine. But, like, 24/7 coverage.
It's like the royal family in England, right?
Right. Who cares? I don't care. Again, going back to Kim Davis, I don't care.
I like that he's had a much more positive message than most popes, and I like that he's advocating for actually helping the poor and addressing climate change and some of these things. But again, and I said this on Facebook, okay, so if he did do some kissy face with Kim Davis, you know what? It wouldn't entirely surprise me. We're still talking about religious dogma that is no matter how nicer they are to the gays than previously, they're still saying you people are performing an abomination against God and going to hell. So
yeah. At the end of the day, that is the dogma, right?
Absolutely.
You might be. That is, at the end of the day, what the Bible says according to the Catholics.
Right. And if I want to go out and you know, murder and rape, 500 people and just be a horrible son of a bitch and then at the end of my day say, forgive me, God, I have sinned and, you know, now I accept the gospel, whereas if you were a good-hearted philanthropist your entire life who's been wonderful but happened to partake in some homosexuality but didn't feel the need to apologize for it, you're going to hell. Well, that's still the dogma that rules what we consider modern Christianity as a whole, really, except for maybe Unitarians.
Well, and Greta point, she said the only thing to remember about the difference between Catholics and Christians on that point is that Catholics do consider your good works. You won't get into heaven, but you will get into purgatory if you are atheist or gay, but only if you were a good person, though. For the Christians, that doesn't matter. You just have to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior and believe in all that stuff.
Well, certainly the evangelicals and the Southern Baptists and the Pentecostals and
exactly. Yeah. They don't much care as long as, you know, JC's in your heart.
Yeah.
You didn't do any gay stuff. No gay stuff, and JC's in your heart and you're good to go.
Well, I lived in Florida and then Texas, so I think my stint in purgatory has has been fulfilled at this point.
I agree.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time here. Anything else that we forgot to spout off about?
I don't think so. I think we're pretty much covered.
So we're going to have some more guests coming on. Pierre is not gone for good. He will pop in here and there. Dana will be obviously on the show quite a bit when he has a chance. So we have some more friends and smart people coming in to give their two cents. We're going to try to do this one a lot more often. I'm not going to say we're at the point where we can yet do it daily, but, you know, we're going to get close to that.
Yeah.
Obviously, and also shooting to try to get some syndication going. So by all means, please spread the word. Tell your friends, your family, rabbi, lawn care professionals, and anybody else who might be interested. Very much interested in your feedback, requests, whatnot. Do we have an email they can shoot at yet, or do we still have to generate that, figure that out?
We'll work on setting that up and then put it in the show notes. How's that?
That sounds good.
Great.
Okay, so we'll be back soon again. I am Travis.
I'm Rachel.
This has been Irreverent Testimony, and we'll see you next time. Bye.